Hi there, and welcome back to Edible Ocean, Season 2, Episode 6. This will be our last episode for a while, so this is a good time to go back and listen to the episodes we released during Ocean Week this past summer. But this week, Professor Tony talks all about everybody's favorite fish, tuna, with Professor Megan Bailey, Associate Professor at Dalhousie University in the Department of Marine Affairs, and Dr. Hussein Sinan, who got his PhD at Dalhousie in the Department of Marine Affairs and is now the Director General of the Ministry of Fisheries and Ocean Resources in the Maldives. And I can say that as a lover of tuna melt sandwiches, I really learned a lot from this conversation, so stay tuned for Professor Tony interviewing Professor Bailey and Dr. Sinan.
Well, today we're going to talk about tuna, an iconic fish species consumed by almost everyone. And we're very fortunate today to have two experts that can discuss different dimensions of the harvesting of this iconic species in particular contexts, especially developing country contexts. So I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves.
I'm Megan Bailey. I'm an associate professor at Dalhousie University in the Marine Affairs Program.
Hi, my name is Hussein Sinan. I am a former Dalhousie graduate and now working in the Ministry of Fisheries and Ocean Resources in the Maldives.
Well, welcome to you both to Edible Oceans podcast and our second season. So let me just get right into it. I'm just wondering if one or both of you can give our listeners some idea of the importance of this fish species for, human food sources and what nations are the primary harvesters of tuna globally?
For tuna species, what in the Atlantic, what we have is bluefin tuna mostly that we catch, but it's not just only for bluefin that goes onto the sashimi market or what ends up in sushi or sashimi. But there are the tuna that we have in our sandwiches, that's skipjack tuna, mostly caught by purse seine fishing vessels with industrial nets, or using sustainable methods such as pole and line and hand line. So you also have a lower kind of great quality fish for yellowfin. So there are several types of tuna that are important that reaches to the developed markets such as Canada. But there are also important tuna species, smaller tuna species that are consumed locally in developing countries, which are called neretic tuna. So you have the Spanish mackerel, for example. Those small tunas end up in local diet, and which is very much common in Atlantic Canada as well, which is usually consumed as it's either caught recreationally or it's caught by vessels that fish for commercially as well.
Yeah, I guess I just add on a scale perspective. We're talking millions of tons of tuna that are caught every year across the various species that Sinan was mentioning, and then across all of the oceans, I guess except the Arctic Ocean. But otherwise, tuna is everywhere. So it's everywhere in the ocean, and then it's everywhere in the markets as well. From the local, I would say more informal and invisible sale of tuna that we don't often see reported, to grocery store counters and lunch sandwiches for kids at school, to the sushi and sashimi market. And so it is very much a ubiquitous product. And I think people often just call it tuna without that recognition of the multiple different species that there are.
Yeah, I'm just wondering also if you could give us some idea, one of you or both, of the state of the tuna stocks and the different subspecies of tuna. How are they doing?
A bit of a loaded question in terms of how we define how well populations of fish are doing. But generally, I would say about 3/4 of the tuna that we catch are coming from what are assessed as fully exploited populations, which means they can be classified as sustainable, but they're kind of on the edge of the maximum that you would want to take. And so there's about 1/4 of the tuna that's coming from populations that are overfished or experiencing overfishing, so where we might be catching too much or the populations are a little bit too low.
Are there specific species or subspecies that are, you know, more in danger than others, and or areas of the world where there's more of a problem?
I think the, you know, in the Atlantic and in the Pacific, the bluefin tuna seems to be one of the species that have, you know, in the history turned out to be, you know, overfished. But there are, you know, significant management focus and pressure laid by the industry, you know, laid by the NGOs and the global organizations to forcing the countries that fish for these species to manage stocks in a sustainable manner. So over the last few years, we've seen an increase in the stock health of these species. However, you know, as Megan mentioned, these species, for example, the Atlantic you know, skipjack tuna doesn't go and migrate into the Indian Ocean. So these stocks remain within that ocean. So it's an ocean-specific, the geographic range itself is also quite important. In the case of the Indian Ocean, for example, the yellowfin and big-eye tuna species are overfished. In the Pacific, these tuna stocks are doing quite well. In the Atlantic, for example, we have issues with big-eye tuna at the moment. So it's very region-specific as well, but there are, you know, the organizations that manage these species, as I said, you know, a species can travel hundreds of miles. So within that geographic range, many countries fish for these species. So the management of these species are bound to be taken, or the responsibility falls into regional fisheries management organizations. You know, so those organizations sometimes would have 50 members, 52. Some are quite small. For example, the Southern Bluefin Tuna (CCSBT) has around 7 members. So it all depends on who fish for these species, who has an interest, and the geographical range.
Yeah, thinking while we're on the topic of the sustainability of these species, is there something you could recommend that consumers should look for when they're buying tuna in the supermarket to, you know, ensure that we will continue to have tuna in the future?
So I'd say if you're a consumer and you're heading to the grocery store and you're looking at the canned tuna aisle, the things you're trying to look for is what kind of species is in the can and how it's been caught. And sometimes that is easily findable on a label, and sometimes it's less findable. But species-wise, I'd say you're mostly looking for skipjack or albacore. If you're in Canada, there's an albacore fishery on the West Coast that's a troll fishery. And there's some really amazing products coming out of the Pacific albacore fishery. If you're shopping for skipjack, you might be looking for Poland line caught skipjack, for example, from the Maldives, and that's labeled on the can. So again, kind of knowing how it's caught and what species is important. And you can also look for particular eco-labels in the store. So often when you're looking at tuna, you might see something like FADS free, which means it was not caught using fish aggregating devices. You might see Marine Stewardship Council or MSC logo, which means it's met a third-party sustainability certification. You might see dolphin safe tuna, which is a little less relevant today than it was a while ago, but just indicating that any nets set on the tuna were not done in association with dolphins. I think the harder thing is often knowing what to buy at restaurants. So actually in Canada, the majority of our seafood is purchased at restaurants, not in grocery stores. Mm-hmm. We're really moving away from being home fish cooks, is what I'm hearing from seafood departments at the grocery store. And so then you need to be able to ask at a restaurant what it is that you're buying, what kind of tuna it is, and if they know how it's been caught and or what country it's from. And that can be difficult. There is a program across Canada called OceanWise, which partners with restaurants, and it's a recommendation program. So it's not a certification, but it works to recommend particular fish and fisheries for restaurants to put that kind of OceanWise logo beside their products on their menus. So that can be something to look for when you're purchasing seafood outside the home.
Yeah, very helpful. Thank you very much. I think people will find that useful when they go shopping and when they get to the restaurant. Maybe we can shift the focus a little bit more in our discussion of tuna to look at the situation for developing countries that are trying to protect their livelihoods and the fish and the fishers living in them, given the power of offshore fishing fleets from powerful countries like the European countries, China, Japan, Thailand, whatever. This is a big issue. And I'm wondering if you could give us some insights of what small nations like, say, the Maldives or others have been facing with respect to their important tuna fishery.
Yeah, that's a great question because most of the post World War II, a lot of countries, especially developed countries, started paying subsidies to access fishing waters of other countries to go and venture into the high seas. With the adoption of the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, most developing countries or all the countries in the world within ocean space got exclusive economic zone. So these developed countries, to access waters of developing countries, they needed to pay royalties or fees to access those waters. So right now, with the kind of like the development of these capacities within developed countries, they started paying royalties to developing countries, for example, Seychelles or Mauritius in the Indian Ocean, or Papua New Guinea in the Pacific, or others in the Pacific Island states. So that meant the developmental aspirations for these developing countries was not mainly to develop their own fleets, but was more focused on getting those revenue, because the urgent need was for them to access, to utilize their ocean space.
So basically the focus was on then getting royalties from developed countries rather than developing their own fleets. And well, this hasn't always worked out that well, I guess, but anyway.
Yeah, it hasn't. And that's the reason, that's the reality we face right now, right? Even when developed, right now, for example, as Megan said, status of the fishery in the tuna world, for example, has been most of the fisheries has reached the biological limit or has exceeded the biological limit. So that means that the developing countries, they don't have any space in the ocean space for them to grow and realize their development aspirations itself. So the only way that they could do is if developed countries like the European Union, Japan, Korea, or China, if they transfer their fishing capacity into developed countries for them to developing countries for them to go and fish. For the Maldives, we are a bit lucky in this sense, because we are in the middle of the Indian Ocean and we don't have any other economic activities other than fishing. So for centuries, we've been fishing for tuna and tuna-like species for using pollen line and hen line only. So according to our law as well, you can't use nets to fish in our waters. So all foreign fishing vessels are banned in the Maldives. And that comes not only from the government, it comes from down to the people. So the people has urged their parliamentarians to develop those principles in the Fisheries Act itself, so that there is no room for upcoming politicians also to change those. There are significant obstacles as well for them. Even if you fish those, you need to go and sell your fish or tuna to developed countries, for example, where they already have enough fishing capacity and they've already secured the market. So for developing countries to access those markets, there are significant barriers as well. There are tariffs, which Canada is facing with the U.S., for example. Similar mechanisms that exist for developing countries as well.
Yeah, are there particular issues that you've had in the Maldives or you can think of with respect to other developing countries that particular nations, for instance, that have been, accessing their fish stocks and have caused notable problems in terms of depletion of those stocks? Or is there any history to that that you might mention?
The example of Somalia is perfect, right? We always attribute the piracy of Somalia and the economic losses that has led to from piracy. But then to kind of trying to pinpoint the root cause of those piracy is because the Chinese, Japanese, and the EU, the European fleet were accessing Somalian waters and getting their fish off. So that meant there was no fish coming towards the shore where those fleets can go and fish, because most of the Somalian fishing fleets are so artisanal, they can't go so far out into the ocean to get those. And tuna, being a highly migratory species, it goes in and out of Somalian exclusive economic zone. And so while they're so poor, the only resource that they had for to feed their people and to have an economic prosperity was tuna. And those species were taken out away from the population. And that kind of started to create economic tensions within those communities. And that's one of the kind of like the repercussions of illegal fishing that happens, which is not really seen out in the public domain.
Yeah, I guess I would add, like, one interesting thing in fisheries is if we look at other environmental issues or sectors, we see a polluter pays principle. If we think about the carbon tax that we have had, and I think we've just lost in Canada, the idea there, the principle, is that those who will be emitting and creating pollution, for example, are those required to kind of pay for that behavior. And in fishing, it's the opposite, where the more you've caught, the more you've contributed to over-exploitation actually sets you up to argue for continued or increased access, right? So it's those conversations that are really, I think, problematic to notions of sustainability when the fleets that have spent decades emptying the oceans are those who can then stand in a room and say, because of that behavior, that historical catch should lead them to be able to continue exploiting into the future. And I think that's a bit of a conversation that needs to shift and better understand and represent the or take responsibility, I think, for the role that countries have had in putting us into this state, as CNN says, where now at full exploitation, there isn't room for development aspirations and to recognize the rights of developing countries within a UN legal framework where they have rights to fish in their waters, but no opportunities to do that because the resources are fully exploited.
Yeah, thank you for that. I just want to bring up another issue. I don't know if it's a big issue with respect to tuna, but we do hear about practice going on in terms of illegal or undocumented fishing, whereas stocks might be exploited in an unsustainable way, but then the fish that are caught are transferred to other vessels that supposedly have more legitimacy in terms of the way they fish. Is this a big issue with tuna, would you say?
I think I would say it's an issue. I mean, one thing that I think is important is to kind of recognize and break up a conversation around illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. These are really different things. And so in some cases, there is illegal fishing happening, or there's illegal transshipment at sea that is clearly should not be happening. And in other cases, there are fisheries that are informal or small and aren't regulated or not reporting their catches. And sometimes those get treated as equal problems, and they're really fundamentally different, right? And so I just think that it's important to kind of, I don't know that we have, or I guess I would say there's likely uncertainty around the estimates for how much tuna is coming out of the waters, right? And some of that will be due to illegal fishing, and some of it will be due to the fact that we just don't catch every or count every fish that's coming out of the waters. And not to kind of demonize that aspect of some of these fisheries that are kind of moving into and making their way into more data-intensive enumeration and observer programs, but aren't quite there yet. And so, but transshipment at sea, I think, is an important component of legal fisheries, is understanding, what the regulations are. And we have port state measures and measures to control how tuna are traded at sea or on land. I don't know, you might have more specific.
Yeah, you're right. I think usually when we say illegal fisheries, we pool everything together. But there are, just like any other fisheries, there are bad actors even in tuna fisheries. And right now, most of the fisheries management organizations are moving towards quotas, right? So every country gets a quota on how much they can fish. So there are issues where, you know, if you want to hide how much you have caught, you try to obviously undermine the quota process. However, there are, moves or mechanisms, as Megan mentioned, the catch documentation scheme, which is, again, an administratively significant burden for developing states, right? If you have a country where thousands of fishing vessels, small canoes, for example, going out and fishing, how are you going to trace back to which canoe that fish was caught? So those are all kind of things that we think of. At global level, it's really nice to have. But when it comes to implementation in developing countries, when there are so huge coastline, it's impossible to implement in practical terms.
Great. Well, we've covered a lot of issues here, and I think we've given our listeners some insights into this iconic species, as we call it. So I want to thank you both very much for your participation in the Edible Oceans podcast. Thank you.
I'm Edith Wilson-Sousa, the audio and production assistant for the show. I also post to our Instagram sometimes, which you can follow us on at @edibleocean_podcast. Professor Tony Winson did the recruiting and hosting for the interviews. If you'd like to contact him, you can reach out to him on his website at theindustrialdiet.com. Please remember to rate and review the show on whatever platform you use to listen. It really helps other people find us since we are a teeny, teeny, tiny podcast. And finally, this podcast was made with assistance from the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada.